Mr. Gordon, when you're ready.
May it please the court. This case is about a dismissal for lack of jurisdiction on the grounds of standing. I think that's an incorrect holding because Bantam's entire case was based upon asking for additional time to make its proposal conform to the requirements through discussions. And under Information and Technologies, which is a case in this circuit, it says if you are going to fix deficiencies in your proposal through discussions, and then you can have a substantial chance for an award. So therefore, there was no basis for dismissing this case.
In spite of the fact that the proposal said there would be no discussions?
Well, it said no discussions on initial proposals. However, once the government made a determination to conduct discussions, then FAR 15306 comes into play, in which, at a minimum, the government is supposed to conduct discussions to allow offerors to cure their deficiencies in their proposals.
Were you done with the response to Judge Gallarza?
Yes.
Okay, very well. Suppose that we should agree with you that as a matter of standing, your client has standing.
Yes.
And we turn to look at the merits. Difference does that make in the posture of the case as far as you're concerned? Standing and the merits in this area, at least, are very closely allied because one is asking in both instances whether there was prejudice.
Well, because if you have to look at the merits, then you have to decide the merits on the administrative record, and the judge did not do that with respect to all the issues that we raised in the case. One could argue that the judge dealt with whether a reasonable time was given to conduct discussions. However, the judge did not deal with disparate treatment and did not deal with charges that the other two offerors lack right responsibility. So, and he did that strictly on the basis of the fact that he said there was no standing in the case. Mm-hmm. Now, getting into the merits of what he did decide, I think the judge really did not look at the situation fairly. This was a situation involving remedial action. Bantam had a facility. The government made an award improperly to Dismas Charities without discussions. Had discussions been conducted properly at that time, Bantam would have had a facility and would have had a substantial chance to award. But as a result of that award, the lease expired, and Bantam protested. And over a period of time, the government finally turned over some documents, the documents went into the court, and then the government took corrective action. As part of that corrective action, Bantam came back in and said, we don't have a facility now because during that period of time, we lost the facility. We can't use that one again. However, the RFP specifically allows for people to submit a change in facility after the government has decided to conduct discussions. And so when Bantam notified the government of that fact, the government realized that the loss of the facility had resulted from this extended time. However, it only gave Bantam enough time to do only part of what was needed to submit a compliant proposal.
Now, how much time, if you start at, December 8th, 2006, this I guess would have been,
yes.
Was that the date that the decision was made and announced that there would be the process would be restarted?
I think it was December 12th.
Or 11th, the 12th, yeah, okay. And then, yeah. So ultimately, you had until the end of January when it was ultimately...
Right, a total of 47 days.
47 days. But that seems to have been a pretty large proportion of what the original period for submitting requests for proposals was, wasn't it? And wasn't that 60 days?
Well, actually, Your Honor, the way these proposals go out is first there's a request for information that goes out into the street that notifies people, start looking for facilities. That occurred in August of 2005, I believe.
I see.
So, really, if the whole period is well over 200 days under the normal circumstances, mm-hmm. I'm not saying they have to give 200 days here.
Right. How much do you think would have been reasonable?
I think another few weeks would have been reasonable. And that wasn't in the plan. The government made a plan, which is in the record, that was in which to conduct the remedial action. Bantam asked, when's your performance date? No answer was given. And they kept pretty much to that plan. The only reason they varied from it was in their initial discussions, they forgot to ask Dismas to correct a deficiency that had caused the first procurement to go down. So they had to change it to that extent to a week. Otherwise, they didn't vary from it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Bantam basically was in a situation where they didn't have enough time to get everything in. Okay, and I think the judge evaluated based on one element of what needs to go in, which is your facility. Have you executed both sides of the lease? Well, Bantam got the landlord to sign but did not sign itself. And the judge focused on that and said, you haven't met that requirement and you had enough time to do that. But when you measure time for a reasonable time, you have to measure the whole time that would take to really get this proposal in. When the government knew Bantam had to submit a proposal, Bantam said, we just found this facility within 6 days. This isn't the first time the government's ever heard of someone changing a facility, so they know that it's not going to be done in a week or two. You have to get zoning, you have to get community support letters, and so forth. So what should have happened was Bantam should have gotten what would have been a reasonable time, which would have been a few more weeks, and I think Bantam then could have had everything together. As a result, they didn't. I think the government had a second duty in this case to do so because...
Because you left yourself somewhat vulnerable. I mean, if you have four things that you have to do,
yes,
and two or three of them are time sensitive, they require time, one of them does not, but you don't do any of the four, then you put yourself in a position of not really being able to say, time was the thing that caused us not to comply, because you have one or two things that you could have complied with. So that's, I think, what the judge in effect was saying was, the time element really is not critical here because you didn't do those things which could have been done just with the stroke of a pen in the case of the lease.
Well, we didn't do the things that could have been done within an unreasonable time. But when you look at what was...
But it would have cost you $13,000, but okay, you could have signed the lease, right?
That's totally inequitable to make someone do that, because you're still going to be submitting a non-conforming proposal, and now you're paying a $13,000 penalty that's caused in part by the fact that the government refused to provide a performance date, an estimated performance date. Why?
Would the additional time have made a difference in terms of your client's willingness to make that deposit? Would the additional time have made a difference in terms of your client's willingness to make that deposit?
Yes, because with the additional time, they would have had the opportunity to have everything together, and then they would have hopefully got from the government a performance date, which they asked for again, because that would be very helpful in negotiations for the facility lease. They never got that from the government. Now you have to remember what the situation is here too. The government is in a situation where their improper award caused this lease to expire. Okay, that's first thing. Second thing is, when they made the proper award, the awardee now has a facility in which it can remove its contingency. And now it is proceeding without any risk. If it's later terminated, its contract is later terminated, it can file a claim for termination damages. Why should the contractor have to expend additional money, who's been wronged by the improper award? Why should he have to expend additional monies to just stay in the running? It's inequitable. And all that's required is a little more time.
Seems to me it's not quite that simple. I mean, obviously you spend money putting together these proposals, and probably a lot more than the $13,000 deposit. I mean, it seems to me that was just one aspect of this that should have had sort of no question, no hang-up, you know, to assure your client's place in the bidding.
It didn't assure. That's just the point.
If we signed
it, what it assures is that we lose $13,000. But because we didn't have a reasonable time to provide all the requirements, there's no assurances there unless we get discussions.
That we are complying. There's a greater assurance that you'd be in the game.
Greater. The government's taking the position here. If any one of those requirements isn't there, you're out. So there's the assurance is only relying on the discretion of this agency. Okay. I think Bantam, you know, they could have signed it, they could have lost the $13,000, but there were no assurances unless they had discussions that they would be able to submit a fully compliant proposal. Now, if you look at the RFP itself, which is another argument we made, that RFP is unique. It's been changed since that time, but at that time it was unique because what it said was you can submit a change in facility, but only during discussions. What is discussions? That's where people can correct their deficiencies. It made sense You're going to submit a proposal for the first time. They're usually not perfect. There's usually something wrong with them. So you have time to get at least one opportunity to cure your deficiencies. Bantam had no opportunities at all. The first time they submitted their proposal, they were booted. And that was that.
Mr. Gordon, if time was of the essence, did you ask for a stay from the court below?
The time was of the essence. I guess what you're saying is for relief now?
No. At the same time that you filed your bid protest, did you ask for a stay of the bidding process?
In the court below?
Right.
I think at that time I actually don't remember right now. There were a lot of. I think we did ask for a stay, maybe not. But the point is, we still have a right to equitable relief at the point in time at which the options ended or the contract was terminated for convenience. I don't think the fact that we asked for a stay is dispositive in terms of the remedy now. You know, there have been cases below, the Seattle Security cases at the Court of Federal Claims, where they said, okay, the contract performance has gone on, but it was an improper award. Go back and have discussions. If it has to be a change, you can terminate the contract, or you can not exercise options. So I think that's the grounds that we're staying on.
But
here,
there was no request for a stay before the court below. Is that what you're saying? I couldn't find it in the record.
Okay.
So I presume there was no request for a stay.
Yeah, I think there was. Maybe performance had been stayed as a result. I remember now. Performance had been stayed as a result of the first protest by the Bureau of Prisons. In other words, they were going through and they were evaluating. Once they were still evaluating, then we protested again. And at that time, they still had not made a decision.
Okay. You're into your rebuttal time. Would you like to say anything? Very good. Mr. Yarowatiker, you're taking, let's see, 12 minutes, is that right? And Mr. Thomas will have three? Very well.
And may it please the court, the trial court correctly dismissed Bantam's complaint because Bantam was not prejudiced by its elimination. It clearly didn't meet the requirements of the solicitation. Moreover, to the extent that Bantam is alleging in its briefs that there was some bad faith on the part of the Bureau of Prisons, that's completely unsupported by the record.
Well, let's take the facts as most favorable to Bantam for purposes of looking at the standing question, in effect say that on the claims that he makes, that he has valid claims on the merits in order to decide whether or not they're standing. His argument is twofold. He makes a number of arguments, but the one that interests me, and I'd like to have your response on, is the argument that when there was an error in the original award, which was effectively conceded by the government, and the government doesn't concede in so many words, but that's their argument, and that error caused their lease to expire, that meant that the only way they could get back in the game, once the doors were open for resubmissions, was to have enough time to scramble around and get everything done that needed to be done, and that they weren't given enough time, and with respect to the lease signing issue, it would have been draconian to say, you've got to sign the lease, even if the government is likely to say, sorry, you don't comply because of the things you haven't had time to do. Now, that's a long form of a question, but I think you have all the parts in place. What do you say to that argument as to why they're standing in this case?
The plaintiffs had enough time. The reason
We have to assume that they didn't for purposes of standing. That's their claim. And we have, for standing purposes, I think we have to assume the merits of their claim.
Well, I think that's not exactly right, because in the Bantam case, the earlier Bantam case by this court, it was clear that one actually does look at the record in determining whether there's clear and convincing evidence that prejudice exists in the trial court, and then this court reviews that determination for clear error.
Why isn't that just a merits determination as opposed to standing determination?
Well, I think in that case, maybe I misunderstood Your Honor's question.
I'm asking about standing right now.
All right. With respect to the question of whether they were given enough time, it's clear that what the plaintiffs have said is that they only needed a few days. Now, given that they only needed a few days from January 2007, it's not something that they dispute. It's not something that's ever been contested. And they said that they would provide an executed right to use, proof of zoning, site plans, photographs. There's no reason to suspect that the Bureau of Prisons, which only knew on January 8th, 2007, that there was no facility that Bannon had available to it. There's no reason to assume that they shouldn't have been able to do what they represented they would do. That is, to have all of the components of the solicitation ready with respect to the, all of the requirements of the solicitation ready by the time that they said that they would. Moreover, with respect to Your Honor's question about why supposedly Bannon should be forced to pay, wouldn't it be inequitable to force Bannon to pay this $13,000 lease? There was nothing that prevented Bannon from, it's not the Bureau of Prisons' responsibility to find, first of all, to even know that there was some negotiation going on with respect to a $13,000 lease. But second of all, if that's the only facility that Bannon could find, then Bannon had the responsibility to either take care of that issue itself or to find another location where it wouldn't have had to, if it thought that it was burdensome, to pay this $13,000 amount. In other words, the Bureau of Prisons is not responsible for finding or making it very extremely easy to find in the market a location for this performance to take place. To the contrary, the Bureau of Prisons is only required to ensure that the procurement is taken care of in a fair manner. And indeed, because only a few days were requested from that January 8th letter, it appeared to the Bureau of Prisons, based upon all of the information that it had, that there was no reason not to believe that by January 26th, 18 days later, that all of this information wouldn't have been available.
Help me with this. Does it matter whether Bannon had signed the lease as long as the property owner has signed the lease? If I have a lease signed by a property owner, don't I have a lease?
Well, the Bureau of Prisons...
All that remains is for me to add my name to it when I choose. It seems to me the property owner, if anyone has a complaint, it's the property owner.
Well, there are two points. First of all, in the solicitation, it explicitly says that it has to be signed by
the... Well, I know, but what's the point of that? It seems to me, if... You could say it has to be signed and dated, and the date has to be in Roman numerals, but I don't think anybody would take that seriously. Why does it matter?
It's not so much to protect the two parties to the lease. It's to protect the Bureau of Prisons. We want to make sure that precisely this situation doesn't happen, that it turns out that after we've awarded the contract to a particular party, that there's still some negotiations going on between the landlord and the service provider. So in order to ensure...
I'm still unclear why... If the landlord is saying, I'm going to give you this property on these terms, all you have to do is put your name on it, why does the Bureau of Prisons care? They know that the property is available.
They know the property is available, but only if Bannon actually is willing to pay the $14,000 deposit, which it wasn't willing to do. And that's the problem here. Until we can be sure, that is, the Bureau of Prisons can be sure, that the facility is going to be available under the control of this particular offeror, it's not fair to ask the Bureau of Prisons to take the chance that, in fact, Bannon would go ahead and then agree, after having been awarded the contract, to pay the $14,000. We don't know what it is about Bannon and this $14,000 in the first place.
I don't think that's a particularly irrational position for Bannon to take. They were scrambling around, not sure that they would be able to get everything together, and didn't want to put $14,000 on the table, presumably when they thought there was a pretty high likelihood that the Bureau of Prisons would say no because of the failure to get community support and other requirements.
Perhaps, Your Honor, but that's not the representation that the Bureau of Prisons actually received from Bannon. Bannon said that within a few days of its January 8th letter, it would have the executed right to use, proof of zoning, site plans, and photographs, and in fact also said it would provide all of the required information under the solicitation, in quotes. The required information, presumably, is all of the information that's required under the solicitation.
That would include the community support indications?
One would think so, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So there's no reason to suspect that there's any reason that the Bureau of Prisons was somehow taking advantage of this opportunity to mess with Bannon. Well, in fact, what was happening was it was simply following the time frame that Bannon itself represented it would be able to engage in this solicitation requirement.
Let me ask you the same question I asked your opposing counsel. What if we were to conclude that there is standing here and then move on to look at the merits? How much of the merits is open to us to look at in light of the disposition of this case in the trial court?
Well, I think in light of the disposition...
Specifically with respect to the disparate treatment and bad faith issues.
Well, the bad faith issues actually were taken care of by the trial court in its opinion, explicitly. Not point by point, but mm-hmm. there is a finding that there was no demonstration on the administrative record
disparate treatment.
Then with respect to disparate treatment, I suppose what would happen...
I think of those two as largely linked because... Well, go ahead.
Well, I think that's precisely the point, Your Honor, I was about to say. In order to show that there was disparate treatment, one would presumably have to say that these other offerors were being favored over Bannum.
Yeah.
So I don't think that there's any reason that the court couldn't find that there has been a disposition of that issue on this case. Moreover, there has been a merits disposition in the following sense, and that is that the court found that the Bannum was properly eliminated having not met the solicitation requirements. That's why it found that there wasn't clear and convincing evidence to demonstrate prejudice, because it never could have met the solicitation requirements had there been discussions as the plaintiffs had requested. There's no reason to suspect that this more time or more talking to the Bureau of Prisons would have changed the circumstances under which Bannum would have been able to perform, given that one of the key reasons, as Your Honor had stated, for Bannum not meeting the solicitation requirements really had nothing to do with time at all. Just in the brief time that I have available to me, let me briefly talk about one of the other issues that Mr. Gordon discussed, and that was the notion that the solicitation requires that one site change proposal be considered. That's not true. The sentence that that Bannum relies upon is, quote, only one request for a change in an offeror's proposed facility will be approved by the contracting officer. And the Supreme Court has actually stated in a case called Gutierrez de Martinez that when will or shall is modified by only, it means may, as it does in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 11 and Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 16. So it's simply not the case that that sentence is something the Bannum can hang its hat on in order to demonstrate that the solicitation requires that one site change proposal be accepted. Finally, I'd like to address the issue that's raised in the Hawkeye determination by from GAO. In that case, Bannum uses that case in order to say that because it alleges all other offerors should be disqualified, that therefore it has standing in order to go forward and request a remedy of discussions. That's not what the Hawkeye case or the Wilcox case that's cited in Bannum's reply actually pertain to. What they say is if what you request as a remedy is a recompetition, you may be able to say you have standing by saying nobody met the solicitation requirements. In this case, however, requesting discussions was the remedy that the plaintiffs wanted. They wanted to come back under the existing solicitation. They can't show by clear and convincing evidence that they would be able to meet the requirements of that solicitation, and accordingly, they haven't demonstrated prejudice for that purpose. Even if they were requesting a recompetition, they wouldn't be able to show prejudice because contrary to the Hawkeye, the good that was requested was gloves. In Wilcox, it was bore lights. And in both of those cases, the providers actually had gloves and bore lights. Even if we were to have a new solicitation in this case with different requirements, they would still require a halfway house, and the plaintiffs don't have a halfway house.
Mm-hmm.
So we would say that even under those circumstances, there wouldn't be any standing. With respect to bad faith, the trial court found that despite the numerous insinuations, Bannum can't demonstrate bad faith, and as we've shown in our briefs, Bannum was given 30 extra days to submit its initial proposal, was permitted to submit required documentation 10 days late, and was not eliminated when it revealed it lacked a facility. So for all of those reasons, there's no bad faith. And finally, I'd like to answer an insinuation that Mr. Gordon made with respect to the notion that somehow the Bureau of Prisons was responsible for them losing their facility. We didn't know that they lost a facility until January 8th. They didn't represent that they had no facility, and indeed, if they had no facility, they shouldn't have brought a protest in the Court of Federal Claims.
Is that clear on the record? It was a little unclear to me in reading the briefs whether that was, in fact, an undisputed fact that they...
I don't know that it's undisputed, but certainly it's something that there's no evidence to back up.
All right.
So, Your Honor, for those reasons and the reasons in our brief, we respectfully request that the judgment of the trial court be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Hero-Attaker. Mr. Tomasek. Good morning.
May it please the court. The RFP, as amended to allow full and open competition, occurred in December of 2005. During the many months that this procurement took place, Bannum submitted multiple extensions of time. It actually changed its site on three different occasions. Judge Allegra's decision correctly focused on what was the state of affairs when Banham submitted its third and final site, and he properly concluded that that submission did not meet the clear and explicit requirements of the RFP. The solicitation explicitly required that all offerors submit information providing for a right to use a facility. And if you look in the joint appendix at page 10,139, the solicitation defines what constitutes a right to use the facility.
Let me ask you a question, because it bears, I think, on the whole lack of sufficient time issue. Let's assume, number one, that the initial award was clearly flawed, and there was no doubt that it was flawed. Assume, number two, that the government said, okay, we're going to have, we're going to reprocess this, and we'll give everybody 3 days. And Banham said, 3 days? No, we can't do this in 3 days. We don't have the facility. And they said, sorry, 3 days. Do you think that Banham would have a claim under those circumstances?
I don't think 3 days would necessarily be a reasonable time, but of course those aren't the facts of
right,
this case.
I understand, but what I'm trying to get at is the question, then we're just arguing about whether 6 to 8 weeks is enough. If you're saying that 3 days would not be enough and therefore Banham would have standing and would be able to argue a violation of its rights by virtue of the giving of only 3 days, then we just have to assess whether the period that was given was long enough.
And I would respectfully submit in this circumstance where the RFP had been out since December of 2005, keep in mind that Banham was the incumbent. They had a site. It was in their interest to delay this procurement as long as possible because they continue to derive revenues as the incumbent. That's one of the sources I would respectfully submit for why they sought multiple extensions.
I thought that the inmates had actually been moved.
At some point later during the process, but not initially. The day the RFP was issued, the day after, Banham sought a 60-day extension of time.
Okay.
Their entire course of conduct,
But to get back to my question, if in the three-day situation, it's hypothetical, I understand, but in that situation, would Banham be able to, would they prevail based on the unreasonableness of the period of time given?
I can't answer that question, Your Honor. I think as in a hypothetical sense, it might be unreasonable, but in the circumstances of this case, I would argue it's not.
Okay.
And let me just say with respect to, I would ask the court to look at what Dismas submitted, because the court asked about the prejudice that would be suffered. Dismas submitted a warranty deed. It is page 15,023 of the appendix, a signed warranty deed, granting them the right title and interest to the property. And with respect to the notion, my time is up, with respect to the notion...
That's all right. I took a lot of your time, so you can take a little more.
All right. Thank you. With respect to the notion that Banham was not given the opportunity to discuss these issues, I would ask the court to look in particular at the questions from the government dated December 28, 2006. That's in the joint appendix at 14, 297 and 298. Discussion notice number one to Banham, and then look again in the joint appendix at 14,406 and 407, January 18, 2007. Not once, but twice, the government reached out to Banham and said, look, we have problems with your site. Give us the information required by the solicitation. And what did Banham do? They submitted an unsigned lease. How long does it take to submit photographs? That was another mandatory requirement of the solicitation. Now that, Your Honor, could have been done within a day or two. I don't know why they couldn't accomplish at least submission of photographs on the site. Another mandatory requirement which my client had to meet was letters of community support. There's no letters of community support. I don't know what the government could possibly have done faced with this clearly inadequate proposal that did not meet the requirements of the solicitation. My client did meet the requirements of the solicitation, and in point of fact, they've been performing for a number of months. Judge Allegra's decision should be affirmed. It would be manifest injustice to do otherwise.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Mr. Gordon, you have... we'll give you your full rebuttal, okay. Since I've given the other side a little extra time.
I guess based on what I heard, I don't think the government has an argument regarding whether or not there's standing. There is standing. The arguments they're making have to do with prejudice, which is a merits determination. And that's what the Banham case is talking about. It's not talking about initial standing. We had initial standing. Now, going into the Bureau's responsibility in this case, Bure had the responsibility to give Bantam a reasonable time to submit its change in facility proposal.
Is it true that the Bureau was not aware of the fact that Bantam no longer had a facility as of December 12th and not until January 8th or whatever it was? Is that what the record reflects?
The record reflects that the Bureau had contingent leases and purchase contracts from everyone in its record showing that they'd all expired or were no longer effective. In fact, they asked discussion questions. Is your lease still available? That was the first discussion question that came up.
As of
December 27th. That was one of the questions that went to Dismas. That's one of the questions that went to the other offers.
And they got the answer to that in early January?
January 8th, they received
the
answer.
So that's the date at which the BOP learns that.
Now, Bantam said, in the last 6 days, we found a property. We expect to have a lease executed in 3 days. And then we listed the things that we would be able to give the Bureau of Prisons after that time. We said we should be able to get a zoning letter within a couple of weeks. We said we should have a lease. We should have a number of things, and we listed them. But one of the things that's not on that list is community support letters, because we didn't say right away we'd be able to get the community support letters. Those things take time. And I'd submit that if you're going to measure what time is reasonable, you have to look at what time is reasonable at that point in time. It's not 8 or 18 days to get everything done. And that's what a compliant—that's what you're supposed to submit as a compliant proposal.
Yeah, but you do put yourself in a behind the eight ball when you don't submit photographs, which could have taken an hour. I mean, I understand as a practical matter the argument is, well, why should we bother to do all this nitpicky little stuff?
I hear what you're saying, but Your Honor, the way you're supposed to measure time is not seriatim. You're supposed to measure it as what does it take to submit a compliant proposal?
No, but if you come in on the day it's due and you have everything except, you say, the only thing we haven't done is we haven't got a community support letter because the head of the PTA has been sick with pneumonia and she says she's going to have a meeting of her board on Monday. You're in better shape than if you don't submit at least or your photographs, it seems to me.
Those were submitted a couple of days later on January 30th, the photographs and so forth. So we were trying to rush to get everything done. But I think Your Honor made a good point. You know, all we had to do was sign that thing. That's all we had to do. It wasn't a big deal. The hard part was getting the landlord to sign it.
Yeah.
But we still did not have a performance date from the government. Why didn't they give it to us? They have a responsibility to do that. Why not? They know that that's something that's used in negotiations with landlords.
But with respect to the landlord lease signing, you could have gone back to the landlord and said, we now have the contract, we want to renegotiate the lease terms. That was still possible, wasn't it? Unless you had submitted a signed lease.
When you sign something that says you're paying with the penalty or not, you know, you're on the hook for that money.
But it's still open to negotiations at that point, unless you submit a signed document.
You sign the lease, but you open to negotiations? Not to my knowledge. Once you might sign that contract, you're on the line.
Bantam did not sign the lease.
Right, that we did not sign the lease because we needed more time to submit a compliant proposal. And with more time, we would have resolved that easily. All you have to do is sign it. The only thing that's really hanging out here is community support letters.
But without a signature on that lease from Bantam, the government had no assurances that you'd actually go forward and have that facility. The government could have, you could have, the day after the government said, fine, we'll go ahead with this contract, you could have said, you know, we've had a change of heart. That facility is really not the best.
Right.
We're going to find yet
another.
You're
absolutely right, Your Honor. The government could not have awarded us a contract without signing it. But they could have come out with one discussion, one opportunity to have discussions on our change in facility proposal. And they didn't give us that. Okay, I think I'd also like to say something about the...
Very briefly, if you would. You're short of time, so go ahead.
This idea that we were delaying things for revenues, we were booted out of this procurement originally because they made a small business set-aside. That's why we asked for additional time. We never got enough time. That was also improper. Dismas talks about what they've done. They have no risks. And I don't think the government's made a cogent argument about how the court decided the issues of whether we have standing to assert disparate treatment in that other people were allowed to participate in discussions with deficiencies or with the fact that the other parties were non-responsible and that they would have to do a re-procurement. Thank you, Your Honor.
Very well. Thank you. Thank both counsel, all counsel. And the case is submitted.